Today we are going to talk about food logging, and I love logging and I use it so much with my clients, but there's a lot of misconceptions around it because people think that it causes eating disorders, it's only about restriction, it's about compliance, it's about shame, and they look at it in a really negative way. And I'm still seeing influencers all over the internet saying, I don't count calories, I just eat whole foods. And there's problems with that. And so today we're going to talk all about food logging and the myths around food logging and how you can use food logging to enhance your life and achieve the health results that you want. And no, I'm not talking about using it to restrict calories. I'm not. So let's dive in. Welcome to The Body Never Lies. I'm your host, Leela Lutz. Each week, myself and experts from around the world help you uncover the secret ways your body communicates with you to empower you in your own individual health journey. So I think most of us think of food logging as counting calories to restrict to lose weight. And I certainly always did. Like even before when I did my nutrition training, we were really taught, you know, about calories and calories being too many calories and you put on weight. So keep your calories low. And because I was lean, I never actually counted my calories. Now, I did do some logging in a sense, but it was a very sort of blanket, like general logging. And what I looked at when I looked at my log was like, yeah, everything I ate was natural and no preservatives and organic and all of those things. And I had things from all of the macronutrients. It was just a list, but it was never an in-depth log. And because I wasn't overweight, as I say again, I didn't see the point of logging. And I'd been told, you know, logging causes eating disorders and it's about compliance and all this sort of stuff. So even myself as a practitioner was anti doing them, right? Now, I know like some people do diets that are as low as 500 calories. And so they will log when they're doing that 500 calories to make sure they stick to only eating 500 calories. And then when they stop eating the 500 calories, then they stop logging because the logging is associated with the restriction and the need to stick to the restriction and sit in that box. So then they get this association with it, right? And then unfortunately, people with eating disorders, they have restricted and restricted and restricted, or binge restrict, whatever. And it's seen also that if we talk about logging in any way with someone who's had an eating disorder, we're going to trigger that eating disorder and take them backwards in terms of the psychological, mental, emotional, and also take them back into the habits again. And I disagree with that as well. So obviously there's a time and a place, and people who have eating disorders should be working with someone who's an expert in eating disorders. But I do have some clients who are recovered anorexics and they log and they get a lot out of it. And I would encourage you to go back and listen to my episode with Hattie Boydell, who was anorexic and used logging to actually free herself from her anorexia. So we know the statistics and the studies show that 70% of female athletes suffer from low energy availability or relative energy deficiency, so LEA or REDS. And what this means is that their output is significantly high and their input is not matching their output. So this is the first problem that I see, is that people do not understand just how much they need to eat for performance. All of the focus on food is not eating too much so that you don't gain weight. It's always about restriction. You know, carbohydrates give you diabetes. Fat gives you heart disease. Like everything is about don't eat too much of that so you don't get X, Y, Z. there is not enough focus on how much do I need to eat to perform. Now, there'll be a lot of women listening to this saying, but I'm not an athlete. But I would argue that a lot of the women that I work with who train every single day, and then they, well, 5 days a week, and they train quite hard, even the people that are doing HIIT every single day or group classes or whatever, then they go and run around all day after their kids and rush around getting to work and getting all the things done. Like, they're constantly rushing and stressing themselves out, have absolutely no idea how much they're under meeting their needs constantly, even if they're overweight. Okay. Hopefully by listening to my podcast, 3 different podcast episodes on different categories of weight, overweight, underweight, all of the things, you hopefully know now that just because you're overweight doesn't mean you're overeating. So most people, women, do not realize that some of them actually fit into the athlete category, or they also have just never had the experience of understanding how much food they need to eat to fuel themselves. So the recommended dietary intake of calories, so I posted that slide on my Instagram, I might add it into a newsletter for you guys as well, is the recommended dietary intake of calories per height, weight, age, etc., and activity as well, is really about giving you the minimum that you need to prevent starvation. It's not optimal for performance. And I'd say the same with the recommended intake of dietary nutrients and minerals. We'll come back to that as well. So the recommended dietary intake of calories is insufficient. So part of logging is working out how many calories you eat versus how many calories you expend, and not because calories in versus calories out, you must be eating too much, that's why I'm getting you to log. No, it's about saying, are you able to meet the demands of that you need to perform? Now, yes, if you want to lose weight, you will need to be restricted in calories, but it's only okay and healthy to restrict calories for a set period of time. And most women are living in a constant caloric restriction, because what happens is they do a diet to lose weight, and then as soon as they stop the diet, they put the weight back on. So they go back into the diet again to keep the weight off, and they just never come out of the diet. Or they'll keep those habits up Monday to Friday, and then on the weekend they'll have a bit of a binge. But overall, their caloric intake across the week is still not enough. And then we also have the people who always diet and then stop logging when they're not dieting. And then they don't realize that when we diet, we actually need a refeed process. So we need to work back up to maintenance calories slowly over time. And so we don't put the weight back on. And also, when you diet, there's a post period of diet after dieting where you have this hyperplasia where you get excessively hungry. And if you do not strategically increase, you will just eat an excessive amount of food because your body will be screaming at you to eat an amount set and more food. So food logging is not about just about dieting. It's about maintaining health, maintaining weight, maintaining performance. So when I look at a food log, so all of my clients that come to me do a food log, and I have this saying all the time, you can't guess. You're not paying me to guess. You're paying me to make a very accurate assessment of your lifestyle and your actions, activity, and what's going in your mouth. But you're also paying me to make an assessment of your behaviors and your environment and all of the things that make up our choices and our health. So if I said to you, like you, the listener right now, if I said to you, so what did you eat on Monday for lunch? I want you to honestly ask yourself, do you remember? Most people find it really challenging to remember. And if they do remember, it's kind of like, oh, I think I had this. And then I think, oh, I don't know. Unless you like make your lunch every day and you make yourself the same lunch every day. which, by the way, actually is a form of logging in a way, doing the same thing over and over again. Most people have no idea. They just have no idea. And then within that, you know, people will also say, well, I eat a lot of food. And so it might like look like a lot of mass, like the volume of food might look like a lot. But until you understand the value of food, you can't actually say accurately that you eat a lot of food. And I have a lot of women that come to me and they're like, I eat so much food and I eat all the time. And we actually log it. And the food that they eat actually has little value. And so they're undershooting the mark quite a lot. So the first thing I do when I set up a food log for a client, I use Chronometer. I don't get any kickbacks or anything. I honestly just use it because I pay to use it. I pay for a platform and all my clients, I can see all of their food logs in there. I just use it because it is great. Now, so from my end, when you're working with me as a client, I can control what you see in your Chronometer. So I don't give people too much of an idea of how Chronometer works when I first get to work with them. Because one of the problems is when we're doing an assessment, if we know what the assessment's going to be, we are going to make psychological changes to do the best that we possibly can on the assessment. And that's just human nature, right? We all want to do the best. So I try as much as possible to keep it fairly neutral for clients. And so I remove a lot of the visibility for them as to what they can see. So I actually turn off all the calorie counting and all the macro counting and everything so they cannot see what the daily totals are. Like they can see some kind of stuff, but it's not giving them definitive answers. Because for me as a practitioner, I need to make a true assessment of what you're doing right now. Every single day, what you're doing. If you decide that Leila's going to look at my log, so really I should eat some more vegetables, or I should not have that, or, you know, if you start changing things, it's not going to give me a true account of who you are and what you're doing. And then I start adding things in that I might be doing it too quickly compared to what you were doing 3 weeks ago before we met, because you added in more food or you changed things around. Like I need a true account so that when I start giving you advice, I'm not giving you the wrong advice and stressing out the body more. So this is a really important part. And I encourage you, if you're going to go and download Chronometer and start logging and start looking at your own logs, I would encourage you for a week to just be as you were for the last month, 3 months, and just write it down in Chronometer without really looking at it until you get to the end of like 2 weeks to make a true assessment of what you're doing. So the first thing I look for in a food log is that person eating enough? So we need to be able to function. We need a minimum of 45 calories per kilo of total body weight, if not lean mass, if you know your lean mass, as a starting point. Now, me training every day, that's not enough food, but generally I like to start with that as a starting point, or have a look at the TDEE.net calculator, total dietary, it just escapes me what it stands for. Have a look at that calculator and it will give you a general figure of what you should be consuming relative to your height, your weight, your activity, your age, etc. So we start there. And we need to look at this as an average as well. So some people, like I said before, will eat nothing all week. Now, it might just be because they work during the week and they're so busy working, so they skip a lot of meals. They don't actually stop and take breaks to eat meals. And then on the weekend, they're with their family and they're relaxing, and so they are more often likely to sit down and eat proper meals. So they might just have a difference in the weekdays and the weekends, or work days and non-work days. And it's really important to take all of those days. So I always take 2 weeks of data and I take the calories from the 14 days, add them all up and divide them by 14 to get the average calorie consumption for the 2 weeks. So within that, I'm also looking at, does the person eat enough protein? So protein is 1.6 to 2.2 per kilo, kilos. 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kilo of body weight. And this is all in the numbers podcast as well, the numbers that you need to focus on. We're also looking at the carbohydrates, which should be 5 to 7 grams per kilo of body weight. And then fats should be around 20% of total calories. So I'm looking at the macros. Now, because people don't understand food and we've got such a fear around food, I always see people overeating some things and undereating something. Whether they're an overeater or an undereater, there's always like a mismatching of what is optimal for that person and what they're actually doing. Usually because they have negative beliefs around food, like carbs are bad, or, you know, you can eat as much saturated fat as you want, which is not true. And also because they just don't realize the value of food, right? So for instance, 1 gram of fat is equal to 9 calories, but 1 gram of protein or carbohydrate is equal to 4 calories. And so if you visually put as much fat on your plate as you did protein, your fat would be actually like 80% of that meal. One, because, you know, like fat is so calorically dense, but also the food that it's in, like if you think about butter and your teaspoon of butter, like that has so much more fat in it than, say, a steak, for instance. But then the steak also has fat in it that you can't see. I mean, you might have cut the fat off, but there's still fat in the meat that you can't see. And so your fat can just like completely blow out of proportion just because you don't have an understanding of how much fat you should be eating and what that visually looks like. And this is where I think, you know, the eyeballing and the intuitive eating, we can run into problems with that. Generally, people who do that, who eat whole foods, they massively overeat fat just because of this. Now, fat is really healthy. Yes, it is. And we will do a whole episode on fat. But fat is not our primary fuel source. Glucose is. And turning fat into glucose can be done. Turning proteins into glucose can be done. But they're metabolically expensive processes. And so your body will slow down its metabolic rate so it doesn't need as much carbohydrate and slow down other function in your body. Also, too much fat in your bloodstream contributes to insulin resistance. It inhibits, because it inhibits glucose getting in at the cell level. So it's actually more the fact that high fat combined with high carbohydrate gives you type 2 diabetes and just high fat in general. So we really need to pay attention to our fats. Yes, saturated fat is essential and, you know, it's so important for the cell structure and our hormones and all of the fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, K, and E, but too much of anything is not a good thing either. So no, you can't eat as much saturated fat as you want. So the macros are one thing. The next thing, though, are the micronutrients and the minerals and the vitamins. Now, it's very quick for people to go to a practitioner or a doctor and have a test or have symptoms and for that person, practitioner, doctor, whatever, to prescribe a supplement. Now, I totally believe, and I know from doing this for a very long time and looking at clients' logs, that you can get all of your vitamins and minerals from your food. You can. You need to be eating enough and you need to be eating the right foods to get those. And so for me to say, oh, you know, I did a test and you're deficient in zinc, so have a zinc supplement, without looking at your food and teaching you about how to get food, zinc from your food, is really kind of negligent, I think. And this is something to watch out for too with people who sell supplements and make a living selling supplements. Now, I'm not saying supplements are bad. We've use them periodically in different client cases, and I've used them myself at different periods. But if we're not paying attention as well, you might have quite a lot of zinc in your diet, for instance, but you come off on a test of having a low zinc, and now we're going to just overload you by putting more zinc in, rather than looking at, well, why is your body not utilizing the vitamins and minerals? So, you know, we need to have a look at the whole picture. So I love Chronometer because it actually shows me all of these minerals that you're getting from food. And then we need to have a look at, well, what types of food are you eating that have them in them? Because maybe you're not assimilating them properly because of the way that food comes in. And so it would be wrong to me of me to overload the system by giving you more of something that you can't absorb and you can't utilize. It's also that you have to think of vitamins and minerals. They don't just come in a pure form. They come in a carrier, and the carrier can have an effect, like it'll come in an oil or a powder, and there will be ingredients in those things that might be irritating to a specific person. And a lot of people actually have to find exactly the right supplement, like in the right thing that works for them, and it's quite a long time and a bit of hit and miss. We also know that in a system that's not functioning well metabolically, even if you're low in something and you just go and add it back in, this can be a burden to the system as well. And so, you know, there's this real belief that if your zinc is low, you should just have a crap ton of zinc to get you up to the right levels, and that can actually make you worse. So I would always go for food first. And I encourage you, you know, one of the first things to do with Chronometer, if you're using it, is to focus on getting all of your vitamins and minerals up to the recommended dietary intake. And remember that that is, a minimal, it's like to prevent starvation, not for high performance. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to overshoot. Like, there's actually people who have made themselves unwell from eating too much liver, right? And having too much B12 and all the kind of things. But it is easier in terms of eating foods and getting the nutrition from foods for your body to assimilate that than it is to assimilate it from a supplement. So, and I have clients that have cupboards full of supplements that they're not using, they're not taking. One of my clients, you'll hear in another podcast, calls it the supplement graveyard. Like, you buy stuff and nothing changes in your physiology, so you just get recommended another supplement. You haven't finished the bottle. And supplements are expensive. They're like $30, sometimes $60 a bottle, and you're not using them. You know, it's a lot of money just going down the drain. When I'm looking at fats in the food log, I'm also looking at the ratio of fats. So we have saturated fats, we have monounsaturated fats, and we have polyunsaturated fats. And we should be having mostly saturated fats and some monounsaturated and as little polyunsaturated as we possibly can. Chronometer is one of the few food logs that actually defines the three different types of fat and gives you a visual representation of the fats. I also like Chronometer because it gives you a visual representation of the macros in like a little wheel, so you can see how much fat you're having. Because like I said before, I should have said this before, but 1 gram of fat equals 9 calories. When you look at 10 grams of fat and 10 grams of protein, you think, oh, well, they're equal, but they're not, because that's actually 40 calories of protein and 90 calories of fat. So when you put that in a visual context and you're looking at a wheel, you can see that it's way more than 20% fat. It's a lot more. So I really like Chronometer for that. And I love it for the breakdown of saturated, mono and polyunsaturated. And this is a big thing I'm seeing in the wellness space as well. People having so much olive oil and monounsaturated fats, and when they should be having more saturated fats. So just be aware of that. And again, this is something that you wouldn't see if you didn't log. Something I also look at is consistency. So are you consistently eating regular meals? Are you eating at the same time? Are you going too long without food? Now, everyone's talking about balancing blood sugar. One of the keys to balancing your blood sugar is eating the right amount of carbs, fat, and protein at the right time for you and being consistent doing that. So if you go for long periods of time without food, you're going to have low blood sugar. And then you're going to have, if you have a large amount of food, you're going to have high blood sugar no matter what the food is. And so you're going to have this dysregulation of blood sugar just because it dropped way too low because you didn't eat enough. Also, if you're going to go and have a really high-fat meal and then you're going to go and have a high-carbohydrate meal later, that might also cause big swings as well. So we want consistency in the food. It doesn't mean you need to eat the same macros at the same time every single day and all the things, although there is a place for doing that. But if we're having issues with blood sugar handling, I want to see in the food log why, rather than, you know, make the assumption that carbohydrates are bad or the person needs to go on metformin and all of the things. So another thing is meal timing, and we talk about chrononutrition. So the stress hormones are elevated in the morning, and they're supposed to be. And we honestly exert the most energy in the morning, so we should eat the biggest meal in the morning. So chrononutrition looks at working with your circadian rhythms. And so we're looking at eating the most food when we wake up in the morning, or also looking at the eating the most food around our training sessions or when we have the most exertion and our output is high. And we know that our output gets less in the evening, or it should be, especially if you're not training in the evening, you're trying to wind down and get ready for bed. We want to eat the least amount of food in the evening. We don't want to go to bed with a full stomach. Now, the people that wake up with high fasting blood sugars normally are the people who are having the biggest meal at nighttime, and sometimes the highest amount of fat or carbs at nighttime relative to the rest of their day. So again, it's really wrong for me to just say, oh, you have high morning fasting blood sugars, you need to be treated as if you were a pre-diabetic. So we're going to give you a medication or a supplement for that, you know, whether it's niacinamide or whatever it is. I'm just really not looking at the root cause of the issue and go, is it really just about meal timing or, you know, chrononutrition and not following our circadian rhythms? Something else to look at is nutrition partitioning. And this is something we get into more with people who are doing a lot of exercise. So nutrition partitioning is all about setting yourself up pre and post training. And look, honestly, if you do want to put on muscle mass, which is a really good thing to do, is probably one of the most beneficial things that you can do for your health, you probably want to focus on this. And if you are having trouble with blood sugar handling, this is also something really important to focus on as well. When we fuel ourselves correctly before training, we have better results from our training, less catabolic and cortisol results from our training. And also when we feed ourselves properly post-training, we take advantage of the best time in the day when we have the most insulin receptivity and we can utilize the fuel better than any other time in the day. So nutrition partitioning might be for someone like, I'm going to have a really high carb, high protein meal straight after training, so within 30 minutes of training, and I'm going to have a certain amount of protein and carbohydrate pre-training as a snack, and then I'm going to push my fats to other parts of the day. So, you know, I could just have someone who's having issues because they have their fattiest meal right before training, and then they go to the gym and they just totally bum out and they're just too fatigued to train properly, because too much fat overburdens the liver as well. And your liver is like your battery pack. That's where we're going to utilize glucose to convert a thyroid hormone and all of the things. So, you know, well, if I look at someone's food log, I might just be like, well, how about we just move some fat around rather than cut calories or, you know, cut things out, or again, just make an assumption that someone has pre-diabetes. Now, some of the most interesting things that I find with food logging is it really helps you get to the root cause of certain issues, okay? So, for example, with binge eating, people generally binge eat because they are starving the rest of the time, or they're restricting the rest of the time. So when someone does a food log for me, they're like, I'm a binge eater and I can't stop binge eating. And I'm like, okay, we'll just do the food log. I just want to see how the whole week goes. When I take the binging food away, so say they have a binge on a Saturday, and it could just be like on Saturday, they just go out a lot and they still generally eat healthy food, but they eat an excessive amount of food. Or it could be that they just sit there and eat a bucket of ice cream every night, or, you know, heaps of chocolate, whatever it is. When we go into this excessive state, when I take that food away and I look at the rest of the week, they are always 100%, I promise you, under eating in some way. And then what happens is they get to a point where they're just so bloody hungry and they often have the time all of a sudden to sit down and eat. Or there might be an emotional trigger that sets them off, but generally it's because they're under eating the rest of the time and they're absolutely bloody starving. And I remember when I lived on a low carb diet, and I would go, if I did have carbs, I would just binge on them. And it's because my body was screaming out, oh my God, woman, give me those carbs. And what I really needed to do was add in moderate carbohydrate to my diet to match my performance needs. And then I would have stopped binging. And I actually never, ever binge, to be honest. If you've been enjoying all the episodes of The Body Never Lies, but you're wondering, Leela, where do I even start with implementing all these great things that I'm learning? Well, I've created something just for you, and I'm so passionate about you getting access to it that I am giving it away for free. The Body Never Lies Insights course helps women over 35 who are sick of all the tests with no answers uncover the root cause of their long list of unexplained symptoms with a scientifically proven self-assessment tool. Over 4 live workshops, I'm going to take you through the assessment that I take every single client through to help them establish where they are truly at with their health. The assessment includes all the things that their doctor and quite a lot of other practitioners, to be honest, have never asked them, and will leave you feeling 100% certain that no, it is not all in your head. Your body never lies. Whether you've been eating clean and self-researching for years, maybe you're sick of giving up all of the different food groups, maybe you've tried a few pro-metabolic approaches and it's made you worse, or even if you've just arrived at a crossroads of knowing you need to do something different for your health and you don't know where to start, this assessment tool is for you. If you want to get this for free, and I probably won't do this again, then head over to thebodyneverlies.com.au and register now. We are starting on January 15, so you can make 2025 your best year yet. Of course, places are limited, so make sure you get in because it is first in, best dressed. When we look at, someone's got digestive issues, I'm really interested in, like, everyone that I work with that has digestive issues does under eat in some ways. And the real irritation comes from, one, when we under eat, our intestines, our digestive system is a muscle like every other muscle in the body, and it requires energy. And we know when we don't eat enough food, the body will actually lose not just muscle mass, but our organ mass as well. And then it doesn't have the energy to contract and push the stool along. So everything slowed down, and that can just be the source of the digestive issues, just not eating enough food. And then on top of that, you throw in, I don't eat anything all week, but when I eat heaps of stuff on the weekend, or I eat foods that I wouldn't eat during the week on the weekend, and the gut just can't handle that, right? Like the same thing, like I said, with the binging, people will tell me I can't eat carbohydrates. They really irritate my gut. So they don't eat carbohydrates all week, but then they'll go out on the weekend, they'll have a pizza, or they'll eat like a whole loaf of bread, like I said, because they're starving from carbohydrates, and their gut will be irritated from that because it's an excessive amount of food compared to what they normally eat. So you can't just expect your body to make enough digestive enzymes for the 200 calorie meals that you always eat and then eat an 800 calorie meal and for your body to be able to make digestive enzymes and have enough gut motility to move that along. It's just, you know, it's like throwing petrol onto a fire. It just goes out of control. So these are the patterns that I look for with people that have eating digestive issues. Rather than saying you need to cut out more food, you know, when they've already cut out so much food and they're like, well, what the hell am I going to eat now? Like, there's nothing left for me to eat. We need to look at this part of digestive dysfunction. So a really important part of the food log is using it in context of the rest of our lifestyle, right? And using it with data points. So I always get people to log their emotions, for one thing, and their energy levels, because we are very emotionally driven. And, you know, even for me, who was constantly under-eating, my emotional thing around that was just about achievement. And if I was to stop to eat, that was going to interrupt my flow and all this sort of stuff. And it wasn't important to eat as much as it was to achieve. That is an emotional state and a belief system that needs to be unwound. And so when I really got real with myself, it's like, well, why? You didn't eat all day. Were you really too busy? Like, no, I just didn't want to stop. I didn't want to get out of flow. And why don't you want to get out of flow? Because I'm so worried that I won't achieve. Like, we really need to explore these long trails of negative beliefs. So that's a really important thing. You know, it might be, oh, every time I talk to my mom about a specific topic, I get triggered and then I just start eating chips. Okay, well, let's stop focusing on the chips. Let's start focusing on how are we going to work on this trigger that you have with your mum. Do we need to do some emotional clearing around that? So, you know, that is a really important part of the food logging. And, you know, even with mums, like, they'll log, and so many mums say to me, oh my God, I didn't realize, like, I fed every single person in my family and I forgot to feed myself. There's like a whole lot of emotional stuff going on in a situation like that that we need to unpack. So the emotional part is really important. I always put emotions in the food log. The whole point of the food log, you know, is to build an awareness, to get insight into you and who you are and your not just your activity and your calories, but into your belief system and your values and, you know, what pushes your buttons and why you make the choices that you make. This is such an underrated and understated part of doing a log. Of course, we are looking at as well, I use temperature and pulse, and I've spoken about that in a few episodes, but basically we're looking at when you eat foods, does it give you energy or does it take the energy away? I find this much more useful than constant glucose monitors. One, because glucose monitors just measure the blood that's in your bloodstream. I am looking at what is happening at the cell level, and that's what we measure with body temperature and pulse. When I use it, I get clients to measure it when they wake up, after breakfast, after lunch. And we should see a trend where throughout the day the energy gets built up from the food that they eat. But we can see lows because people don't have the right digestive enzymes to digest that meal, because the food is not balanced, because there's too much stress going on. Like, this is a big thing, right? Everyone just focuses on the food. I'm not getting the right results with body temperature and pulse. The same with glucose meters. I'm just focusing on the food. We actually need to focus on the stress as well, because mental and emotional stress can really throw out our blood sugar and can really downregulate our metabolism, which you'll see in the temperature and pulse readings. So we also need to log against your training. And I have been really focusing on this year, because I think you guys, if you've listened to the podcast episode I did about why I'm choosing not to lose weight right now, I really wanted to challenge myself with my training. And I have seen a direct correlation with my performance in the gym and my carbohydrate intake. They're like two lines that just go continuously up in this progression together. Like, there is undoubtedly a massive increase in my performance because of the increase that I've put in with carbohydrates, but also looking at the balance of fructose and glucose. Now, obviously, this is in depth and this is more like when you're working with athletes and stuff, but people who just love training, they would be interested in this too. So, you know, and it's something I can't deny. Like, 20 years ago, I would have said carbs are bad for you. But based on what? now I can actually say to you, no, actually, they're really good for you. I've learnt from logging, I've learnt how to use them to my advantage. And from logging them against my training, I can see undoubtedly that my strength and my performance has gone up with my increase in carbohydrates. So when we have down days in training, you know, I'm looking at, well, what did you eat on that day? And it might just be to help you work out what foods you should be eating before training and after training, like what really works best for you. And, you know, we're not guessing. We're not guessing. We're getting definitive answers and definitive data here. So, you know, I really worry about influencers who say logging, counting calories are bad, and I don't count calories, I just eat whole foods. Now, because I'm an expert logger and because I've been logging for such a long time, I can eyeball food really well and tell you how many calories are in food. And I can pretty much guarantee you that every influencer who says that and is thin is grossly under eating. And they have a type of eating disorder where they demonize logging and counting calories, and they demonize certain food groups. So if you look at what they eat over time, they don't eat certain things. And, you know, this is actually more disordered than logging. Like this it's just another type of disorder. And if they were to log, they're actually avoiding logging because they don't want to see just how little they eat to maintain that rail thinness. Now, coaches who don't log because they say they don't want to give clients eating disorders, they've obviously just never logged themselves either. And they're actually doing a huge disservice to their clients. And they probably only know how to get clients thin by starving them and overtraining them. You know, they don't actually know how to help people perform better, how to help them put on muscle mass, how to help them lose weight without losing muscle mass and just lose mostly fat mass, all of the things. And I hate to say it, they're just being lazy. They don't need to know how to do that if they don't want to, but they need to say, yeah, I'm going to refer you to someone and we should be working on building muscle at the moment. And you need to be logging to be able to do that. If you want to improve your performance, you're going to need to log so you can actually get enough food and enough minerals and vitamins to contribute to your performance. So I want to say as well, there is room for error in all methods. Like chronometer is not always accurate. This week I've had masses of problems with chronometer and I've had to actually work out the numbers myself. I'm only being fastidious about the numbers at the moment because I'm in a cut. If I wasn't in a cut, I wouldn't be fastidious about the numbers. But, you know, when you're doing a deficit, you're trying to stick within the grams in a certain window so you're not going over. So there's room for error. It's a computer. It can't possibly get it right all the time. There's room for error. But the way that we get around the error as well is like when you eat consistently the same foods, you eat the same thing every day, it's much easier to work out what you need. It's much easier to understand how your body responds to things. And, you know, we get a baseline, right? So if you always eat, have three different breakfasts that you always have, we know that there's going to be some accuracy within there and that margin of error is going to wash out over time, if that makes sense. Now, you don't have to use chronometer. There's other things that you can use. There are some AI apps where you can take a photo of the food and it gives you feedback on the food. I have used photographs with clients who have had eating disorders and we need to do some work before we can start logging again, just so I can see what they're eating and I can eyeball it and start, you know, giving them advice to change certain meals and things. Like there's definitely a place for not using logs, but as a practitioner, like you have to give me something where I can see what you're eating every day so I can give you advice. And I want to say something about anorexics as well and refeeding. If someone's been starving, and like this is just extreme caloric restriction, you don't have to be an anorexic to do this. But when we increase the food too quickly, we can make ourselves worse. when anorexics get refed too quickly, and, you know, if this comes from this naivety where we just need to get as much food in as possible, these people actually put on quite a lot of visceral fat to start with, which is not healthy. So we need to increase food slowly over time, but also they end up having a lot of digestive issues and all sorts of other health issues from increasing food too quickly. So even if we're working with someone who's got an eating disorder, we somehow need to work out a way to work out how much they're eating and what they're eating, and then thus can make, you know, a plan and a strategy to increase things slowly over time so that we do not stress their body out even further. So we need to find a way to record what we're eating in some way that's not triggering. So the biggest mistakes that I see with food logs, right? Number one is logging in hindsight. And this is what everybody does. They'll sit down at the end of the day and I go, cool, I'm going to write down everything I ate today. Right? We do this in the beginning just to get a general picture. But if you're trying to change and you're trying to eat more protein, or you're, which is a great thing to do, or you're trying to eat less fat or whatever you're trying to do, if you sit down at the end of the day and put it all in hindsight, you'll always be chasing your tail. And generally what happens with people who do that, say you're trying to increase something, you'll go, oh, I only ate 100 grams of protein today and I need another 20 grams, so I'll just shove that in now. Now, that's very stressful on the body to eat the highest amount of protein right before you're going to go to bed, or to eat the most calories at nighttime. Or, you know, I've overeaten fat and now I can't do anything about it because I've eaten it all already. You know, so doing it in hindsight, you're always going to chase your tail. And this is where people do it and they get sick of it. And they're like, this is pointless. I got nothing out of it. It's really stressful. And they give it up. It's the wrong way to do it. We do that in the beginning to get an assessment of what you've been doing. And then what we want to do is use the food log to prepare in advance. Now, this, when you get into this mode, this is just so freeing, because what you do is you put all your food in advance and then you just eat what you're supposed to be eating according to the log. So you've planned your protein in advance, you planned your macros, you've spread your food out over the course of the day, and you will achieve results. You will get masses of wisdom. You will get improvement in performance, in health, and all of the things, because you've pre-planned. Now, the thing with pre-planning is that it is an organization of tools. And I don't know why people are so anti it, right? Because if I said to you, you want to save money, right? Well, first of all, like if you go to the bank and you say, right, I want to increase my home loan, or I want to borrow money or whatever, they will take your bank account, your bank statement, and they will go through it. And they will say, you know, wow, you spend a lot of money on X, you spend a lot of money on Y, can you cut that back? They will challenge you on your expenses. They're doing this a lot now. It's the same. I'm just doing the same thing with a food diet. It's like, okay, well, you don't eat anything in the morning, but you eat the bulk of your calories in the afternoon. How about, can we move them to the morning? You know, it doesn't match your energy flow. What you're telling me is not matching your values and your goals and all this other thing. It's exactly the same when you set a financial goal. And it's the same if you want to save money. You would do a budget and then you would say, I'm going to put $50 a week into this account. Otherwise, you won't save money. All right, that was my dog and my cat having a little wrestling moment. They get so loud. You know, I've stopped so many podcasts because of the two of them, and I've just decided, no, I just have to keep going with them. And you guys, I'm sure, will forgive me. And if you're watching the video, you can see my cat right in front of my face right now, trying to get away from the dog. So yeah, it's quite a normal thing to budget and track your spending and put money away, move money here, move money there to save money. And you know what? The people who do that actually save money and achieve their financial goals faster than the people who don't. We know that for a fact. So why can't we have the same viewpoint with logging? I've got a goal. I'm going to work towards that goal. I need data. I need specific detail. I need to get granular, you know, like all of a sudden you like start budgeting and you go, oh my God, I've got 4 Amazon Prime accounts and, you know, that's wasting money. You know, it's the same with logging. You go, oh wow, I didn't realize I was doing that and that's taking me away from my goal, not towards it. I should change that, right? So, you know, the thing with logging and pre-planning, I've never had a client who said to me, Leila, I hate you so much because you make me pre-plan my food. Never ever has everyone said that, anyone said that. Everyone normally says, most people say, oh my God, I have so much freedom because I don't have to ask what I'm going to cook for dinner. I now have a plan in advance so I can have a shopping list, which means that I can go to the shops and just get what I need instead of wandering around wasting time wondering what I should buy. I can stick to a budget now because of planning my food out, so I'm saving money. Like, organization gives us so much freedom. And I always laugh, you know, at the park after school and all the mums like, oh my God, I don't know what to cook for dinner. And they kind of like make this little joke at me, oh, Leila always knows what she's cooking. And I'm like, yeah, I do, because I sat down and I planned out the week. But I don't know what you're laughing at me for. I'm the one that's just sitting here enjoying my time at the park and being present with my daughter, because what I have to cook is ready and waiting for me at home, and I'm just going to whack it on and get it on the table. Like, it's a non-stress event getting a meal on the table for me. So, you know, we use the log to pre-plan as well to alleviate the stress. You know, decision fatigue is a real thing. The overwhelm of having to make so many decisions a day, I think one of the best things you can do is limit the amount of decisions you have to make. And one of those is not working out what you're going to eat. And that goes for me for breakfast, lunch and dinner, snacks. The whole week, I know what I'm going to eat. So freeing. I cannot tell you how freeing it is. And I've never had a client complain about having that freedom. So when people, there are people that just have serious aversions to logging, to pre-planning and organization. And this I have to work with them on, because I can't really help them achieve their goals until they overcome this. And generally, if they have this with their food, they have it in some other area of their life, or they're completely out of balance, like they're so over-organized with something in their life, or they spend so much time, for instance, researching all of the health problems that they could have, and they spend so much time investigating and doing protocols and, you know, doing all of these things when they could just sit down and do a food log and get some information. So there's, and plan ahead and, you know, give themselves the nutrients they need and probably overcome most of their issues. There's a psychological thing going on over there. So the biggest thing that I would say is one of the core issues with this, and I use archetypes in my coaching developed by Pip McIver. They're based on the tarot. And the thing that I see the most that people have challenges with when they cannot do things that mean they are organized in advance are they have issues with the archetype of the ruler. And the archetype of the ruler is all about structure and order, and structure and order creates freedom. It creates boundaries so that you can have what you want and get rid of what you don't want. It's about insight. It's about knowledge and knowing and getting to the bottom of things. Like, that is what the principle of the ruler is. So in transformation, I work through these principles. So we have inspiration, then focus, then vulnerability, then imagination, right? So we need to get inspired first to want to change it. Then we have to focus on what we want. Then we have to get vulnerable and work through the stuff that we don't want to work on, right? And we have to get vulnerable and sit with ourselves. And then we have to really imagine life as we really want it to be for us, like not what somebody else wants for us. And then we need to get the insight. And this is the key to the archetype of the ruler, is getting the insight into yourself. And then from there, we can listen. And the listening part is so important. And from knowing what we need, we can implement true self-love. Like, we can truly hold our space for ourselves and have a deep relationship with ourselves. And from all of that, then we can take action and we will get results, right? This is the key formula to transformation. So when I know when people have challenges with this archetype, when they have a lack of order or discipline. Now, discipline is really just saying that you would do something and doing the thing that you would said that you said you would do. It's not, you know, necessarily about good or bad, but it's also about being the disciple. Like, discipline comes from the word disciple, and the disciple learns, right? That's the job of the disciple. So when I say that I'm going to do something and I do it, you know, wholeheartedly, whether it's good or bad, and I come out the other side of it, I can have a learning experience from that. And then from that learning experience, I can ascertain information as to how I should do it better next time. That's what happens when you log. You say, I'm going to apply something in my eating plan next week. I'm going to add more carbohydrates before training a certain type of carbohydrates. Now, I promised myself I would do that. I'm going to stick to that. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it before every training session. Then I'm going to go to training. And then at the end of the week, I'm going to look back and I'll go, how was my training that week? Then we can truly know, do carbs work for me or not? Do those types of carbs work for me or not? Rather than making an assumption, carbs don't work for me, and then just spinning our wheels constantly, always trying to find out what's wrong with us. So this is what being the disciple is. It's being the student of your own life and being in your own body enough and collecting the data and using that to improve yourself. We know that we have problems with the principle of the ruler. When someone is messy, like they're quite messy and disorganized and has an inability to make decisions or take decisive action, right? So this is the person that's like, I'm going to do that on Monday. On the Monday comes, no, I'm not going to do that on Monday. And just this turning up and taking action. It's like, I don't know if that's going to work for me or not, but I'm going to do it anyway. I just have to do it, right? Being too dominant or being forgetful is another problem. And this is when, you know, this is another thing with when we don't log, we just forget. We don't know. And the logging helps us remember, right? Overbearing and the need to be right. And giving unsought after advice and fixing. Now, these are the problems that I see with people who are constantly searching on the internet for what's wrong with them and jumping from one practitioner to another practitioner and another practitioner. And they just see themselves as a project. And they avoid logging because if they were to log, their unconscious mind knows that they would truly find out what was wrong with them and there wouldn't be a problem to fix anymore. And they wouldn't actually know what to do with their life or with themselves if there wasn't a problem to fix. And this needing to be right, like, you know, making blanket statements, oh, you don't need, carbs don't work for me, you know, making a blanket statement without any evidence whatsoever. And also this need to be right. So, you know, these are the people that are like, I did low carb and I lost weight. So they'll go to a party and tell everybody, I did that, so you should do that too. It'll change your life. All of these people have problems with the principle of the ruler and they have challenges at first with logging, and I need to help them get to the root cause of why that is. Another thing to look at in this principle is like the ruler is the archetype of the universal father. So I'm always asking, what was your relationship with your father like? Now, I avoided logging for such a long time, and I have a very strange relationship with my father. He's not really, like, I'm more the adult in the relationship, and my father was never really around. My parents were separated and I had quite deep a father wound, right? And so, you know, not that many of us get the perfect parents. That's fine. That's the way it is. We can't sit here and blame the world and blame them for all our problems. But what is important is to recognize the empty spaces in your childhood or your upbringing where you actually need to make up for yourself. And I mean that by parenting yourself and going, well, I didn't get that as a child, but I need that as an adult. So I'm going to have to learn how to do that. And I'm going to have to heal that wound, right? A really, really important part of healing is learning how to parent yourself, being an adult, taking responsibility, looking after yourself. And learning how to hold yourself and comfort yourself, that's a really important part of parenting yourself as well. And I'm not saying that you can't, you know, be fun and free and happy, but actually doing these things allows you to have true freedom and fun and happiness because you'll have the time, you'll know yourself, you know, you won't be wondering if you like things or things are going to work out for you. You will know. And so you'll be able to jump into those wholeheartedly and enjoy those experiences, you know. You know, a big thing I see with clients is that they have their health has become such a thing that they don't actually have time for anything else. And it's one of the only goals that they have is to get on top of their health, right? But when we look at the wheel of life, we need to set goals in all areas, right? And a big thing that I talk about with clients is, what are your hobbies? What are your interests? What makes you you? Like, if you weren't the mother or the lawyer or the personal trainer or whatever you are, if you weren't those things, who are you? Like, it's such an important question. Most people are just running around crazy with so many things on their plate that they have no time to actually sit down to play and to do things that truly interest them and light up their soul. What I invite you to do is to actually organize your food and make it something that's easy so that you have time to go and explore who you are, to go and do things other than training and focusing on your health. They're important. We should all exercise. We should all eat well. But I really get concerned when it's makes up, you know, 80% of someone's life, what they're eating and how much exercise they're doing and what they look like. So for me, when I know that what we're having for dinner and I can get it ready quickly, clean up, etc., and then I give myself time every night to do something. You know, I'm playing the piano or I'm practicing German or I'm doing something that really lights up my soul and has nothing to do with my work, nothing to do with my husband, nothing to do with my child. It's something that is just for me. And it's something that is just an experience, you know, like who cares if I can play the piano really well? I might never play for somebody ever. It's just something that I like to do by myself. I do it with headphones on. No one can hear me play. You know, it's so important that we make space in our lives to be and to connect with ourselves and not always be chasing our health and not spend every night going, oh my God, like I didn't eat enough fat and because we didn't plan in advance, we're chasing our tail, or sitting there at nighttime going, I'm still fat and I don't know why. Or sitting there every night going, oh, I'm so bloated and I'm so sick of not knowing why I'm bloated and I have all these issues. You know, like you're going to pre-plan and you're going to log and you're going to get data so that you can change your life so you can have more space for yourself. Like I just love those parts of my evening where I'm just not thinking about all this stuff and I'm just playing the piano and I love to sing as well. I love dancing and I love the theater. I love to go to the ballet, like all these other things that I can do because there's space and time because I've organized a part of my life and that's given me time and freedom. So I'm going to wrap this up here. I hope that leaves you with an understanding of how powerful logging can be. I hope it's helped you think about what your resistance to logging might be. And I also hope that this sparks some inspiration in you and that you might like to come along and check out my course that's opening. So I'll leave this with you. I hope this inspires you to think differently this year and make 2025 the year that you really give yourself a different opportunity and the insight to get to know you and what's really going on for you. I'll see you next week. I'm Lena Lutz and you've been listening to The Body Never Lies. If you haven't yet, please go to your favorite podcast app and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. All the resources and references from this episode are waiting for you on my website, lenalutz.com. Just click on podcast and look for this episode. Now join me next week for another episode of The Body Never Lies. Thank you so much for listening. Free.